from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It is the Craig Needles podcast, which of course can be found at londonnewstoday.ca, classicrock981.com, and on your very favorite podcast app. I want to thank you for downloading and listening to this episode today. And today we're going to be talking about two things. One, a death that I don't think this community is talking about enough. And two, why I believe it is time to either disband or dramatically reform Ontario's Special Investigations Unit. Now, Ontario's Special Investigations Unit, before we get started, investigates when a civilian is seriously hurt or killed by a police officer. That's their main job. The SIU has a roughly, the number goes up and down, but it's usually in the mid-90s, roughly 95% clear rate of police officers, which, to be clear, I understand. They get a lot of cases that are essentially slam dunks. I get it, but 95% still feels high. And I think you're going to feel like that 95% is definitely too high once I tell you about the death of Justin Bourassa. No guest today, by the way, just me. This is just me going through the facts with you to explain why the death of Justin Bourassa is, in my opinion, not being discussed enough. It has not been examined enough, and the SIU has not done their jobs, or at the very least, their job has been impeded by the rules here in the province of Ontario. I think this death has been shrugged off both by London Police and the SIU. I'll just say it. They don't seem to be terribly worried about it, and I've been trying to get decision makers on this podcast to discuss it with me, and I'm really not getting anything. So, let's talk about what has happened here, because I believe by the time you are done listening to this podcast, you'll agree with my main point that the SIU needs to be dramatically reformed, entirely replaced, or completely eradicated from the system in this province. Let's talk about the death of Justin Bourassa. Justin Bourassa was walking down Richmond. He was going south on Richmond, minding his own business at roughly 3:45 the morning of October 28th, 2021. Wasn't doing anything wrong, wasn't bothering anybody, had not been involved in anything wrong, was not drunk, was not on drugs, did not have any weapons on him. This is what Justin Bourassa was doing the morning of October 28th, 2021. According to the SIU's own report, which you can find online if you want a copy of it, you can tweet me at Needles on News. I'll send you the link. According to the SIU, he is walking in the downtown core, like I said, roughly 3:45. He's on Richmond, just south of the tracks of Piccadilly, which, to be very clear, is a few meters away from the radio studio in which I record this podcast right now. Very, very close. So he's walking down Richmond, crosses the street, he goes from the side of Richmond on the west side to the east side, and walks towards an alley in between Cloud 29, which is a marijuana shop, which again, meters away from where I'm sitting, and Miso Sushi. So there's an alley there. If you know Richmond well, you probably know the alley that I am talking about. Do you know where the London Chamber of Commerce office is? Just a few steps from there. He walks into this alley. Seconds later, after he walks into the alley, a police car and then another police car quickly move in to the alley. This is all directly from the SIU's public investigation, which they have put online for folks to read, which they do with all their investigations, to be clear. Now, not far away from where Justin Bourassa was shot and killed, near the intersection of St. George and Mill, there was some sort of break and enter. Three suspects were spotted leaving a house there. They took off. Police officers lost them, or at least one of them, and they were apparently heading north. So, and that intersection is south, it's southwest, but it's south of where this all happened. Now, Justin Bourassa was not involved in this break in any way, shape, or form. Had nothing to do with it. But officers continued to hunt for the people who were involved in the break-in that morning. And they should have. There's nothing wrong with that. There was a break-in. You've got to find the people who did it. I've got no problem with that. They had set up a perimeter. Okay. Now, Another thing to keep in mind as I continue to tell you the story is that Justin Bourassa, like I said, was unarmed. Not only that, but the police had no reports of anyone being involved in this break and enter being armed. So they had no reason to believe, no one has said, oh yeah, a person involved in this break and enter is carrying a gun or a knife or whatever. So this is not a situation where people are thinking there's going to be a lot of carnage or weapons or whatever. Or at the very least, no one has reason to believe that at this point based on what was said via the radio. So Bourassa, as I said, starts moving down that alley at 3:49. Officers followed him seconds later. That 3:49 is very important. Keep that time in mind. 3:49 a.m. Now, in the alley, there's no video surveillance. We had surveillance of Bourassa from different businesses walking down Richmond that was pieced together by the SIU, but there's no video in that alley. No surveillance. At that time, there is now. It was installed in April, I'm told, by the people who run buildings nearby, but right now, or in October of 2021, no video surveillance that can catch that alley, apparently, according to the SIU. So this is what one officer who was involved in this told the SIU. They had tried to put handcuffs on Justin Bourassa because of the break-in. He wiggles his way free, makes a run for it. There's two officers in the alley. The three of them, Bourassa and the two officers, go to the ground. Bourassa, according to what one of the officers said, the officer who was choked, puts this officer in a, this is a quote from the report, a rear naked chokehold. And that chokehold lasted 45 seconds to 1 minute, according to what this officer told the SIU. Keep that time in mind as well. 45 seconds to a minute. The chokehold only stopped when Bourassa was shot at close range at 3:51 a.m. Remember that time as well. The officer who shot Bourassa announced over the radio to his colleagues that that shots had been fired and asked for medical assistance. So 3:49, Bourassa walking down Richmond, minding his own business. By 3:51, he has been shot. And 1 minute of that time, or maybe 45 seconds of it, was spent with Bourassa choking a police officer. 4:24 a.m. rather, Justin Bourassa was pronounced dead in hospital. Very, very sad. It took him less than 25 minutes to go from walking down the street to being dead in a hospital after getting shot. It's stunning if you think about it. Because 23 of those minutes he spent receiving medical care there, trying to resuscitate him, trying to bring him back. Didn't work out, very sadly. I want to talk more about the investigation because some of this seems off to me, and you heard me sort of detail the timeline there. We're going to get back to that, but first I want to talk about Justin Bourassa, a tennis pro in Sarnia. His parents, Jean-Marc and Lorraine, who, by the way, Lorraine declined comment to me when I reached out, which is entirely understandable. They have four children. Justin Bourassa, I believe, had three sisters. He liked teaching tennis. That's something he did. They actually set up a charity fund called Love All, which is a clever name. The primary goal of the fund, this is right from their website, is to provide financial assistance for the development of youth tennis in Sarnia Lambton. The funds will be dispersed in the form of scholarships, and that's great. So they're trying to give him a legacy, which is very good. Full disclosure, I do have to add this. Bourassa did face two charges of assaulting a peace officer when he was killed. There was an incident on August 27th, so about 2 months before the incident with London police. There was an incident. Bourassa faced two charges of assaulting a police officer, or a peace officer, rather. Those charges were obviously dropped after he died. Now, we'll never know what, if any, relevance that had to the night Bourassa was killed. But I will say, and no one has said otherwise, there is zero chance that the officers involved in the incident that wound up getting Justin Bourassa killed knew anything about that. Anything. No chance. None. So regardless of all that, Justin Bourassa is a guy, he's 29, with a family who loved him, and they're going to miss him. And they spent months, from October, when he was killed, all the way until June, wondering what really happened the night he died. Wondering why their son, or their brother, is dead. So we get the result of the investigation in June. Now we're into July. It appears they still do not know. And speaking of the London Free Press, Lorraine Bourassa said, quote, "It is absolutely clear and disturbing that the officer's gun was pointed at his neck point blank, and there was no evidence of other forms of intervention such as taser, pepper spray, or baton." We'll go back to the investigation right now because that is a legitimate point of contention, isn't it? You see, in that 45 seconds to a minute that the officer was being choked, again, that's according to the officer's recollection of the facts, and I'm a little bit suspicious of that timeline. We'll get to that in a second. The SIU said that it appeared in their examination of Brass's body that no taser or baton or physical force was used. There was no evidence of that at all. Now, according to Director Joseph Martino of the Special Investigations Unit, I believe the quote was, "The absence of evidence doesn't mean the evidence of absence." But let's be reasonable adults here, shall we? If someone was tased, if someone was hit with a baton, there would be signs of that. If someone was pepper sprayed, there'd be signs of that, right? In the eyes or whatever. These things, according to medical evidence that we have here in the real world, didn't occur. So why do they go right to shooting Justin Bourassa? It's 2-on-1, right? There's two cops against Bourassa being the one. And according to their story, or at least the story of the officer that we've heard from here, Bourassa was choking an officer hard enough to make this officer nearly pass out. That's how hard this choke was. The officer was close to passing out. So that takes some strength, right? That means that if you're in a physical confrontation against another London police officer, and you're using enough of physical force on another London police officer to choke them to the point of passing out, you would think the officer who's going against you, the officer who's not being choked, would have a significant physical advantage in this particular encounter, right? To use a baton, to use a taser, to use just physical force to remove Justin Bourassa from the other officer. You'd think a London police officer would be able to handle that physically, right? I would say so. However, this case doesn't necessarily hinge on that. Because according to the way use of force guidelines go for police, and you can find this online, if there is a threat of death involved in the situation, be it to yourself, another officer, a civilian, whoever it is, you can use lethal force. So this case doesn't necessarily hinge on what I just said, although it makes one think about some things. Here's the part where I get a little bit confused, though. It does hinge on whether there is a lethal threat to that officer who is being choked. So let's review that possibility, right? We know that Bourassa was walking on Richmond at 3:49, and he had gone into the alley, and that by 3:51, he was shot. We know that he was walking on Richmond by himself, not talking to cops, at 3:49, because we have the surveillance video. And we know at 3:51, the officer called for assistance because there had been a shot fired, or shots fired was the word used on the radio, at 3:51. So that's a 2-minute time frame, right? 2 minutes. So in that 2 minutes, half the time apparently, or close to it, according to the story that we heard from the officer who was being choked, was Bourassa choking that officer, right? 45 seconds to a minute of the 2 minutes that we do not see what Bourassa was up to, and we do not know for sure what Bourassa was up to, 45 seconds to a minute of that was apparently accounted for by choking, or the choking, or the rear naked chokehold, as the term was used in the SIU report. So of the 2 minutes that we don't know what Bourassa was doing, half of it was that. I want to read to you a portion of the SIU's report that goes from what happened when Bourassa goes into the pathway to what happened when Bourassa was shot. So this is word for word from the SIU's report. For clarity purposes, they refer to the complainant as Justin Bourassa is called the complainant in this. Witness officer one is the officer who was choked, and subject officer is the officer who did the shooting. So now this is me reading directly from the SIU's report to you. Some 20 meters into the pathway, he stopped the vehicle and the subject officer exited. The officer explained to the complainant that he was being detained for a break and enter investigation and asked if he had any weapons on him. Witness officer one joined his partner and the complainant. He removed his handcuffs and was planning to use them on the complainant when they searched him for weapons. At their direction, the complainant turned westward to face away from the officers. Within moments, however, as witness officer one approached with handcuffs in hand, the complainant jerked free from the subject officer's hold and ran away from the officers. He had taken several strides when the officers caught up, each grabbing a hold of an arm. The three struggled to their feet for a period before the officers brought the complainant to the ground. Witness officer one landed on his front and felt the weight of the other parties collapsing on top of him. His microphone fell loose from his body in the fall. He retrieved it and tried to broadcast what was happening, but there was too much traffic on the air to get through. Soon after, witness officer one experienced what he described as a, quote, rear naked chokehold by the complainant. Okay. So everything that I just described to you, so three paragraphs of the SIU's report, apparently happened between 3:49 a.m. and ended at 3:50 for Barassa to eventually be shot after the chokehold at 3:51. So everything I just described to you happened in 60 seconds? Let's hear it again. First, Barassa was told he was being detained for a break and enter investigation. That takes a few seconds. He was asked if he had any weapons on him. Same thing. Witness officer one joins the partner and Barassa in the alley. Gets his handcuffs out to put them on Barassa while they search him for weapons. Barassa turns to the west as the officers told him to do. So that takes a little more time too, right? That's just how things go. Witness officer one approaches with the handcuffs. Barassa gets away from the subject officer's hold and runs for a few strides. Well, that takes a few more seconds too, doesn't it? Each officer grabs a hold of an arm. The three struggle and get to their feet. Well, that takes some more time too, doesn't it? Officers bring Barassa to the ground. Officer lands, feels the other two land on top of him. That's witness officer one. His microphone falls loose from his body. He gets it back, tries to tell other police officers in the area what's going on, but there's too much traffic on the air to get through. How long do you think that would have taken? Probably more than a few seconds, right? Maybe it's 20 seconds, maybe? I don't know. But we're running out of time here because this all apparently happened in the span of about 60 seconds. Then the chokehold starts. Do you not find that timeline suspicious? Does it not feel as though, wait a minute, maybe that chokehold wasn't 60 seconds long? I'm not saying that chokehold didn't occur or that it wasn't 60 seconds, but what I'll tell you is that's one hell of a tight timeline, isn't it? That's one hell of a tight timeline. I'm going to read you a little bit more from the report before we get back to that about the idea of handcuffing Justin Barassa in that situation, who I want to once again establish had done nothing wrong, was not involved in a break-in, had no weapons, and further to that, toxicology reports all came back clean. No drugs, no alcohol, no anything. This is again directly from the report, word for word. While it appears that the complainant was compliant with the detention in its initial stages in the parking lot, it was the attempted handcuffing ahead of a search that seems to have set him off. He might well have had a point. There was no affirmative indication of any weapons having been brought to bear by the suspects in the break and enter. The use of handcuffs may have been an overreach on the part of the officers. Yeah, I'd say so. I would say so. That's directly from the report. And here's the thing. Whether it's an overreach or not, the timeline still doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, I should tell you at this point that I asked Joseph Martino, the director of the SIU, via communication staff about this point. I've sent in some questions and they said, okay, it's all in the report. I sent another email early this morning. We're recording this around 1 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. I have not heard back with my questions about this case. I wanted Martino to come on this podcast, by the way, and was told that wasn't going to happen. If Joseph Martino wants to come on this podcast, the director of the SIU, I would be happy to have him on to have a conversation about this. Happy to have him on. But I think that the people of the province of Ontario deserve more accountability than what we've seen here. We'll discuss that at the end of the podcast, but I think there is more accountability that is deserved for you and for me and the people that are paying the freight for the SIU. The SIU acknowledges these officers had no reason to believe the suspect was armed and needed to be handcuffed. In fact, it's hard to even call him a suspect. He didn't do anything wrong. Could they have stopped him and just asked a few questions? Yeah, sure. But here's the part where I get even more concerned with the narrative that we're being presented. We have the witness officer's description of what happened between 3:49 and 3:51. We've already established that this seems like an awfully tight timeline, right? To have a couple of things happen. That entire ordeal where there is maybe the handcuffs turn westward and then the minute of choking. That's a very tight timeline, right? Here's the other thing, directly from the SIU's report that, in my opinion, calls this entire narrative into question. Again, this is word for word from the report. London Police Service provided the SIU with photographs taken on October 28, 2001 of both the subject officer and witness officer number one's injuries. From the photographs provided, there did not appear to be any visible injuries to witness officer number one's neck. Witness officer number one's medical records from the London Health Sciences Center from October 28, 2001 were obtained by the SIU with witness officer number one's authorization. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, friends, but if someone with apparently enough force to almost make you pass out choked you for a minute and didn't leave a scratch on you, does that feel believable? No bruising, no scratches. Not a scratch, not a bruise. And this officer apparently was choked for a minute to the point that he nearly passed out. That's right from the report. Justin Barrasso was able to accomplish that with, presumably, another officer trying to get him to stop. And Justin Barrasso didn't leave even a mark on witness officer number one's neck? No bruising? How hard could that chokehold have possibly been? Unless, maybe there wasn't a chokehold. Maybe it didn't last 45 seconds to a minute. Maybe nobody was close to passing out. Again, I'm saying maybe. I'm not saying it's impossible that there was a rear naked chokehold in which there were no bruises or no marks left on anyone, including Barrasso, by the way. I'm not saying that couldn't have happened. All I'm saying is that's another part of the narrative that kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit, isn't it? Now, here's the other part from that night. They have the word of Witness Officer 1, who was legally compelled to say something, and Witness Officer 1 did this. But that's all they have. You might be thinking, well, what did subject officer have to say about this? Not a word. Did not turn over any notes to the SIU and did not speak to the SIU. Didn't have to. That's the rule in the province of Ontario. Officers who are being investigated don't have to speak to the SIU. They don't have to turn over their notes. How is that okay? You're allowed to shoot someone in the jaw on Richmond Row and no one's allowed to ask you a question? Hey, why'd you do that? What's up with this? What? How is that even remotely close to being acceptable? It's not. And we get back to Justin Barrasso's family, and they've been sitting wondering since October, hey, what happened to our brother that night? And I said earlier, I don't think they really know. And isn't that another I don't think they really know point? The cop who shot their brother, their son, didn't have to answer a damn question about it. Not a one. Can we see your notes? Nope. How the hell is that okay? Who are we protecting there? It's very clear. We're protecting police officers who do things wrong. That's who's being protected by that. Because police officers who don't do anything wrong, and we'll get to a second example of an SIU case where an officer may not have done anything wrong. Police officers who don't do anything wrong, what do they have to worry about? Here are my notes. I shot this guy because there was a life-threatening situation. So why are we protecting officers who may have done the wrong thing? Why are we doing that? Why does the SIU exist if that's what's going to happen? If that's how toothless the investigations are going to be. Former Ontario Ombudsman Andre Moran, who I know has a checkered history in this city, but hear me out, called the SIU a toothless tiger when he was looking into what the SIU is all about. How is there any more specific and obvious example of that than what we're talking about right here? And again, this isn't their fault. These are the rules. They can't even make an officer who shot someone in the neck share his notes? Now, again, I'm not saying the SIU needs to change this rule. I know that's not on them. But why do you exist? Why do you exist if your response to something like what we're talking about here is shrugging your shoulders? A narrative that, quite frankly, in my opinion, doesn't make any sense gets accepted as fact? How's that okay? Now, that toothless tiger Andre Moran remark, that's from 2008. But here in 2022, still seems to be accurate, doesn't it? I mentioned that there is another SIU case that we're going to talk about. Here it is. Some reporting by Dale Carruthers over the London Free Press would say that the officer who was the subject officer in this case was also the subject officer for a shooting in the summer of 2021. Now, in that case, the man who was shot survived. That man faces several charges in that shooting. The SIU cleared that officer. In that case, the subject had a knife. It was a domestic disturbance. It's different than this. I'm not saying the two are the same. But in that case, did that officer turn over his notes? No. Did that officer speak to the SIU? No. So right now, you're really trying to tell us, SIU and the province of Ontario, that this officer can be involved in the space of two shootings in 3 months. One was in July, one was in October. Two shootings in 3 months. And not once have to speak to anyone with the SIU about this? That's the rule? To me, on the second shooting, you probably got to come in and talk to somebody about it. London police had this officer on duty a month before the SIU had even concluded their investigation about the first case. I, by the way, did try to ask Chief of Police in London, Steve Williams, about this case. I was told there'd be no comment until their internal investigation is complete. Okay, fine. When will that happen? I have no idea. I asked for a timeline, was not given an answer, still have not been given an answer. So we're just going to have some undetermined length investigation. Yeah, we'll get to it, we'll get to it, we'll get to it. Collects dust on a shelf, and Justin Barras's family continues to sit there and wonder why their son or their brother is dead. So I come back to two things. This all feels callous, doesn't it? Justin Barras's family, as I said, they're going to miss him. And the reaction to the SIU seems to be whatever and shrugging their shoulders. We're just going to accept whatever witness officer number one had to say as fact, even though, as I pointed out, and I've pointed this out in emails to the SIU as well, by the way, there perhaps could have been a little bit more investigation there. Or maybe you just express some level of doubt, some level of doubt about what witness officer number one told you. 3:49, Justin Barras is walking down Richmond. He's going south on Richmond, goes into that alley. By 3:51, someone's already getting on the radio and saying that Justin Barras has been shot. And we're to believe that half of that time was spent with him having an officer in a chokehold. I have a hard time with it. Sorry, I do. I have a hard time with that. So I think it's callous to tell Justin Barras's family, oh yeah, no, that 2 minutes, that's what cost him his life. We don't know what happened other than one of the witness officers involved who apparently was choked. But yeah, that's what happened. Sorry. The Barassa family deserves better. London police, they're doing an investigation. They'll get to it when they get to it. They won't give me a date on when that might be completed. They won't give me a timeline. They'll get to it. The Barassa family deserves better. So that's point number one. Point number two, and this is the main crux of this podcast and why I'm doing it today. Why do we have an SIU? Or at least, why do we have an SIU that's allowed to function in the way that it currently is? I'm not saying that Joseph Martino or anyone else there can change the rules as far as whether officers have to provide their notes or speak to the SIU. But what we have right now needs to be radically changed or abolished entirely. The 95% clear rate that I referenced earlier, I get it. That's a little bit misleading. I understand that. They get a lot of slam dunk cases. But we don't need to talk about the clear rate to see there's a problem here. They had an officer involved in a second investigation in 3 months, and he didn't have to talk to anybody. Again, I know that's not the SIU's choice, but if that's the rule, why does the SIU even exist? What are you even doing here? You're supposed to make this a better, more accountable system, and the system apparently is marginalizing your ability to accomplish that. So if that's the case, why are you here? It's time to either get rid of this thing or dramatically change what their powers and capabilities are. They should be able to say to someone, hey, you're going to come in and have a little chat with us about what went down. Now, maybe it's going to be entirely justified. We'll see. But you're damn well going to talk about it with us. Why can't that be part of this? I hope the Ford government and the decision makers within the government, the people there, hear this. I know some legal system advocates, some of them, not all of them, are saying the very same thing and have been saying for a long time what I'm saying on this podcast right now. If a guy can go from walking down the street to having a bullet in his neck in less than 2 minutes, and the SIU can't even speak to the guy who fired the gun, what's the point? What are we doing here? Now, at this point, I'm going to note this podcast has been going on for over a half hour. And I thank you for listening and appreciate the fact that you have. But here's what I'm going to note. If Justin Bourassa started that podcast when he crossed the train tracks, just started the podcast that I'm doing right now, just as he crossed the train tracks near Richmond and Piccadilly, and the podcast kept running up until the point where Justin Bourassa was declared dead in his headphones or on his phone or whatever, it would still be going when Justin Bourassa was declared dead. In the time it has taken you to listen to this podcast, Justin Bourassa went from guy walking down Richmond, minding his own business, not doing anything wrong, to being declared legally dead. In the time that it took the intro music to fade out, Justin Bourassa went from being asked by the police, hey, were you involved in a break-in? To apparently choking Justin Bourassa, or Justin Bourassa rather, choking a police officer. Rear naked chokehold. In less time than it took from the start of this podcast to the intro music to fade out behind my voice. That's what happened. And the response from the SIU has been, makes sense to us. The response from London Police has been, we'll get to this when we get to it. You should demand better. Better for the people of this province. Better for the family of Justin Bourassa. So for government decision makers, I hope you hear this. I hope people share it with you. I'm definitely going to tag some of you on Twitter. Because you should hear it, because the SIU needs to change. The Craig Needles Podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive, your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined, choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London. 1065 Warncliffe Road South and online at lexusoflondon.com. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, an important episode. I put a lot of work into this. I'm glad you could listen. And I'm going to ask that you do the same thing that I'm doing right now. You should tag your provincial decision makers with this podcast. Hopefully they hear it, because change needs to occur at the SIU.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.